From the Korea Economic Institute in Washington, D.C., you're listening to Korean Context, news and analysis from the Korean Peninsula. Hello, and welcome to Korean Context. I'm Jenna Gibson. Today's episode is brought to you by our academic paper series here at KEI. Every year, we commission papers from scholars all around the world that relate to Korea in some way and bring them here to our offices in D.C. to present about their chosen topic. The first paper in this year's edition of the series comes to us from Dr. Matteo Fumagalli, an associate professor at Central European University in Budapest. His paper is titled, "The Making of a Global Economic Player, an Appraisal of South Korea's Role in Myanmar." In it, he digs into all sorts of aspects of the South Korea-Myanmar relationship, which has been steadily growing in the last several years. In this episode of the podcast, I'm here with Dr. Fumagalli to talk about these different aspects, including development assistance, growing business ties, and, as always, the role of North Korea. Thanks so much for joining me here today.
It's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So if I can have you start off, can you give us a little bit of a general description of your paper and some of your findings here?
Mm-hmm. What gave me the idea of writing this paper is basically the impression that pretty much any visitor would get from even a cursory visit to Yangon and other cities in Myanmar. And the impression is that Korea and Korean businesses are really all over the place, from banks to groceries, to restaurants, to various manifestations of the Korean wave. The impression is that really this relationship between South Korea and Myanmar has deepened and broadened over the years. And that got me thinking and basically led to a couple of questions that I wanted to explore in the paper. The first was whether the general impression actually had any evidence in support of it. And if so, whether that fits in a broader strategy that the Korean government has had about how to project power, influence beyond the immediate confines of the Korean Peninsula and Northeast Asia. And I came to the conclusion that despite the fact that this primarily economic relationship has become stronger over the years, and here I mean over the last 5 to 10 years, Korea has remained pretty much a payer, a contributor, a rule taker, than a player. In fact, if anything, it seems to me that it's an actor in search of a script, as I say in the paper. We know that much is happening. What for has remained unspecified or unstated in Seoul? And that's been a bit of a pity, or it's been to the detriment of Korean interests, political and economic interests, because there was a momentum in the early 2000s. Trade was doubling. Development assistance was going up fourfold. But then what? Then it sort of topped at some point and then leveled out and then declined a bit. So it seems that momentum was being built, but the Korean government failed somewhat to capitalize on this. And in the paper, I try to explore the reasons as to why that is the case.
All right. So to the extent that there is a strategic plan, are there things that the South Korean government is doing right? And what would be some of the suggestions that you would have to improve some of this more top-level strategic planning towards their engagement?
There are a number of positive things that Korea has done on the ground. In fact, the more on the ground we are, the more positive the impact. I'm thinking about programs that are geared towards capacity building, which Myanmar badly needs. Personnel training in the government. That is happening and that should continue. Universities, again, training programs for academics. That's very useful. What more should be done? Perhaps it could expand this to training of the military personnel. Involvement in the health sector, absolutely needed in Myanmar. That's something that other East Asian players are interested in. Singapore is doing it, Taiwan is doing it, but Korea is doing that too. And anyone that has seen not only the infrastructure, not only the hardware part, but the software part of the Myanmar health system would acknowledge that that's clearly an area in which any country that is willing to put in serious money can make an impact. There have been blunders or hiccups in this partnership, as there are in any partnerships. I'm thinking, for example, of the failed Antawad International Airport project, which basically would have had Incheon Airport, the corporation behind Incheon, build a brand new passenger terminal building some 80 kilometers north of Yangon. There was a bid. Incheon won the bid. But then there was a disagreement in 2014 between the investor and the government. As the government went back on the deal and asked for a larger terminal that would accommodate a greater passenger capacity, and basically the deal collapsed. And very quickly, Korea was replaced by a partnership between Singapore, Changi Airport, and a Japanese company. The bidders were basically a second, and they were basically automatically granted a new deal. And that, in a way, tells us something about some of the difficulties that the Korean business has encountered in the country. That's probably the most egregious example of a failure. I can't recall other failures of this size or this symbolism, but certainly it's not always been a very happy relationship.
I found it really interesting that you also talked about this relationship in terms of the U.S. interests as well. So, of course, Myanmar relatively recently has been opening up. The U.S. has been playing a slightly larger role. Can you talk a little bit about the U.S.'s role and the U.S.-Korea role together there in Myanmar?
Myanmar's opening, meaning its political liberalization, has been one of the greatest stories in recent years in terms of transitions from authoritarian rule. And here I'm not suggesting that Myanmar is a democracy at the moment, but its opening is real, with clear constraints in terms of the persisting role of the military. But still, Washington's normalization of its Myanmar policy and its relationship, its reversal of its earlier policy, has been a tremendous success, and arguably the least controversial of the changes in the relationship between the United States and other countries that were seen as problematic. So this was a great story, but there are limits to what the U.S. can aspire to do in Myanmar, particularly in the security sphere. And there are a number of reasons for this, the most obvious being that China continues to be a very important partner for Myanmar and will continue to be a very important political, economic, and security partner there, which means that there are a number of things that Western players cannot do, particularly the United States. So it would be very difficult to envisage, say, military cooperation to somehow resurface after a hiatus of several decades. Cooperation between Burma and the United States used to take place, even in the security sphere, some 50 years ago. And then obviously there's been a very long lull. It might one day resurface, but I think that that would immediately spark a relationship from Beijing. So that would be unwise. But this is precisely an area that could be exploited by Korea, whose presence is not seen as competitive. There is no rivalry between China and South Korea in Myanmar, at least not at the moment. So in a way, there are a number of things, particularly in the security sector, that Korea could do, that the U.S. might want to do, but cannot for political reasons. And as I said, training of military personnel could be one, sales of certain types of weapons, military vessels. After all, Japan has been doing this on a very small scale since 2013. And, well, one would have expected China to respond to this. China has not responded to Japan's timid security cooperation with Myanmar. I think that Korea would be on safe ground there. And after all, Korea has no interest in jeopardizing its own relationship with China. So
That was going to be my next question about the role of China. China has a lot of influence and a lot of interests in Myanmar. Can you expand a little bit more on that relationship and how it could impact the way that Korea continues to engage with Myanmar?
That relationship has to be put in a historical context, in the sense that while socially and culturally, the relationship between Myanmar and China goes back a long time, partly because of the proximity of the Yunnan province with Upper Myanmar, the area of Mandalay, but also because over decades, not centuries, there have been waves of migration, particularly from Hokkien and Hakka Chinese to Yangon. So in a way, Myanmar people and Chinese have known each other for a very long time. That said, their relationship has grown close for a number of reasons, but primarily as a result of the isolation in which the generals catapulted themselves as a result of the 1988 military takeover, where basically ties with the West were cut off, sanctions were imposed, China was there. And it's not that the relationship happened by default, I'm not suggesting that, but certainly one has to remember that relations with the United States were much better in the 1950s and at some point even in the early 60s too. But as relations with the West cooled off a bit, well, China was there and relations with China became warmer. So I think that it is a multifaceted relationship. I think it's been very close in security terms. China is the main security provider. China is the main economic player in the country. It's a structuring player. What China does there is consequential for what other countries do and other businesses do. But for example, in sociocultural terms, this is not always a very happy relationship. There are examples of xenophobia across Myanmar, although one wonders sometimes whether this is xenophobia or whether there is this is hostility towards the PRC and the way in which Chinese business people from the mainland are conducting business in Myanmar. I do not detect a similar hostility towards Chinese from, say, Singapore or Taiwan. So there might be some xenophobia towards Chinese from the mainland. So in light of that, I think that Myanmar is eager to diversify its partnerships with countries, business, and people other than mainland China.
So this might be getting a little bit away from some of the things that you've talked about in the paper in terms of South Korea's economic relationship with Myanmar, but it's something that I'm always curious about. I've heard a lot about, in the past, Myanmar being a lot closer to North Korea, and now it seems like they've shifted and they're trying to reach out more to South Korea. Does the North Korea situation affect this relationship, especially, I mean, does it go so far as to affect the economic ties there?
Not any longer, but it used to be an important factor in a sense that in the past, well, during the Cold War period, Myanmar was a good case of intra-Korean competition in the global south. It was very interesting to see a country that had relationships, not always official, but with both Koreas. Relations were warmer with Pyongyang in the 1960s, 70s, and up until 83. Then as a result of the Rangoon bombing, relations with the DPRK were cut off, whereas instead relations with South Korea were upgraded and improved. It's difficult to see what North Korea would have to offer now that no other country could offer. Clearly, there is no competitive edge anymore. Economically, North Korea does not have much to offer. It did have something to offer that was of interest to the generals in the 2000s, and that was in the security area, and had to do partly with some training of personnel, but really the contribution was in the construction of tunnels and bunkers. And that's because both the Myanmar generals and the North Korean regime shared a sense of paranoia and fear of Western aggression, basically built on historical record of Western powers invading various countries of the last 30 years or so. So in a way, it was not a figment of the general's imagination that at some point one Western power could decide to invade them. However, there was no actual plan to invade Myanmar as such. But be it as it may, that led to a good degree of cooperation. There was some sales of conventional weapons from North Korea to Myanmar. There were high-level visits to Pyongyang by higher echelons of the Burmese army. But what really attracted international attention, particularly Western attention, was speculation that the North Koreans were helping Myanmar to develop a nuclear weapons program. As interesting as the topic is, nobody was ever able to find evidence in support of the claims, which as a result should be treated as speculation. Now, this is no longer the case because the relationship between the two countries is still there, but really floating rather than going anywhere. So in a way, it's game over. There is no competition between North and South.
So one thing that you have mentioned already here, but I'm also really interested in this, is the development assistance from South Korea. That's one thing that South Korea takes very seriously around the world, and they also have some programs in Myanmar. So can you tell me a little bit more about any of the programs that they have there that could be helping to increase these ties?
Well, overall, Korea's development assistance to Myanmar has increased tremendously over the last 6-7 years. As I show in the paper, the amount is considerable. Just over 4% of COICA's budget was allocated to Myanmar only about 2-3 years ago. It's not a small amount just for a single country. Now, this has to do with both reputational issues and the way in which Korea thinks of itself in the world, the way in which it has tried to articulate its identity or redefine its role globally and regionally in Asia as well, a formerly aid recipient country that eventually develops and gives back to the international community and returns the generosity. It has a good record in a number of areas, from higher education to health policy, as I was mentioning earlier. And then there are oddities, if you like, such as Seoul's insistence on rural development. This is not to say that this is irrelevant to Myanmar's case. Myanmar's population is still by and large rural. Industrialization is coming slowly to the country. So this is not to say that this is an irrelevant program in Myanmar. However, Korea's insistence on the export of the Semal Undong model seems to have more to do with the agenda of a few people in Seoul rather than something that responds to the actual needs of the Myanmar people on the ground. And as a matter of fact, conversations I've had in Myanmar over the years suggest that this was perceived as something that was being imposed from Seoul rather than something for which locals would have a genuine interest in. So much has happened. Most of it useful and relevant, some of it odd.
The one thing that I'm personally very interested in, my research interests, and the one time that I've written about Myanmar, it was about Hallyu. It was about South Korean dramas being shown on TV and being very popular in Myanmar. So what do you see as the role of some of these cultural exports in Myanmar in creating these ties?
But from a Korean point of view, I would imagine that the most important effect, which I think is happening if on a total level, is that it creates a positive image of the country, which translates into young people wanting to have a cake cut or purchase Korean cosmetics or Korean products because they're seen in K-dramas. Now, K-dramas are everywhere, movies as well, on various channels in Myanmar. Some are dedicated channels too, which I thought was intriguing as well. Not only there are dedicated slots on the main channels of Myanmar TV, but there are also dedicated channels that just broadcast Korean dramas. Over the space of even just 3-4 years, the streets of Yangon have literally transformed themselves, or better, the way in which a certain segment of the Myanmar population presents itself is very different from the way it was. So the number of, say, students that would walk around in longji and flip-flops has decreased, whereas the number of youngsters that are wearing in a particular way that occasionally resembles very closely the way in which some celebrities or K-dramas look like has increased. Now, it's difficult to quantify these things, but certainly the fact that Korean shops are full, the fact that young people are looking at bit different in terms of the makeup that they use. So let's say it's less Tanaka, the traditional Myanmar cosmetic, and more K-cut and cosmetics, that's pretty visible. I'm not suggesting that this is a good thing or a bad thing, but as we were saying earlier, external influence, be it political, economic, or cultural, might face a backlash from the more traditional and traditionalist elements of Myanmar society. Now, these elements, religious nationalists, for example, already have plenty of targets. So before they remember or notice that Korea might be a target as well, probably some time will pass. think that at the moment the main target is the Muslim community in Myanmar, who is on the receiving end of this nationalist backlash. I don't want to generalize here, but I think that there are enough episodes in terms of clashes, conflicts, as well as rhetoric that basically point in this direction, that the openness of Myanmar and Myanmar society has surely enabled a greater engagement with the rest of the world, as the country has welcomed these new international partnerships, but they might not go unchallenged for a very long time. I don't think that Korea is up on the list. I think that Korea is perceived as, obviously, not only Asian, but there is an element of similarity, an affinity between the two countries and cultures that I think puts Korea on safer ground at the moment compared to, say, China, for the reasons that I've mentioned earlier. So there's a somewhat problematic relationship between Myanmar and China in cultural, sociocultural terms. And also Korea is not seen as a sort of a bulwark of Western imperialism or cultural imperialism. It's not associated with that. In a way, Korea has no political baggage, unlike Japan, China, the United States. And in cultural terms, I think there are greater affinities there compared to, say, Europe, the United States. So that's clearly a big boon for Korea and even for the Korean wave as well.
Okay, great. Here at KEI, we of course focus on Korea, but it's always really interesting to talk about Korea in terms of other countries or places that we don't get to talk about very often. So I appreciate you coming here today and talking to me and presenting your paper about Myanmar and Korea relations. So if there's anything else that you would want to say to our listeners, let them know about Myanmar. Is there anything else that they should know?
Well, I think that as far away as Myanmar is from both the United States and, well, to a lesser extent, South Korea, I think that that's a good window on geopolitical competition and evolving political relations between great powers. So it's not only about Myanmar and South Korea, it's not only about Myanmar and the United States, but as the relations with China take a rather dangerous turn, I think that Myanmar could be an interesting window on the world to come. So we should think of that interesting and beautiful country, that is, after all, far away, as one of the ways in which we can observe the competition between great powers or great powers and rising powers and the effects of geopolitical competition on very concrete countries. Now, we always think about U.S.-China competition and with regard to the Korean Peninsula or the South China Sea. Now, clearly, Myanmar is far away from both, but Myanmar is an important country for China, so whatever happens in Myanmar is of interest to China. And if we think of that in terms of the U.S.-China competition on a global level, I think that there are enough reasons for people to follow events in Myanmar more closely.
Thank you again for taking your time and for joining me here today.
Pleasure. It was great to be here.
Thanks, everyone, for once again joining us here on the podcast. If you're curious about Dr. Fumagalli's paper, you can check it out online. We have it on our website, www.keia.org, where we also have a lot of other great research and topics related to South Korea. Thank you again for joining us, and I hope to see you here again next week.